The demise of society's understanding of the basic meaning of marriage, the challenges to religious liberty, and the attacks on innocent human life are all interrelated.
San Francisco Archbishop Salvatore Corleone talking about his presentation at the 2023 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
A rightly ordered understanding of male-female complementarity is the basis for a healthy society, one that is conducive to human flourishing and also is at the heart of a Christian civilization. This is not just theory. It is borne out by practical experience.
You can meet and hear Archbishop Corleone making the case for speaking the truth to power at this year's Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th at Concordia University, Chicago. Registration is $160 and includes three meals. On-campus dorm options are available. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org. There have always been myths about abortion, misconceptions or misinformation about abortion. But with the passage of Dobbs, with that Supreme Court ruling and the overturn of Roe v. Wade, a whole new crop of abortion myths, they kind of came to life and they are repeated in the media on a daily basis and even sometimes by people who should know better, like medical professionals. For instance, an ectopic pregnancy won't be able to be treated now that abortion has been restricted in certain states. It's a myth. Why? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to refute some abortion myths, Dr. Donna Harrison, board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist. She's director of research for the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists and an associate scholar for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Dr. Harrison, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd, for having me.
Why do you think there are so many myths and misconceptions popularly about abortion?
Well, after Dobbs, after the decision that returned the abortion issue to the states, then the abortion industry doesn't want to talk about what abortion really is. And they have spun this wall of blinding snow associating abortion with miscarriages and ectopics, which it has nothing to do with. And that's what I wanted to talk about today. That's probably the single biggest myth that needs to be busted. What is an abortion and what is not an abortion?
So what is an abortion in the simplest terms?
An abortion is any drug or device or procedure that is done with the purpose of ensuring that the human being in the womb is killed during the process of separating or in her womb or during the process of separating her and her fetus. So if the baby is dead, that's called a miscarriage. Okay, if the baby dies naturally, that's a miscarriage. If the baby is planted outside of her womb and you have to save her life, that's a procedure that's done without the purposeful, intentional destruction of that embryo or fetus. And that's what's not being said. And that's what the abortion industry wants to completely distract from. And that is, an abortion is the purposeful ending of the life of a human being.
Why, not only ethically, but in terms of medical ethics, why is purpose, the purpose of the procedure, the bright line between abortion and things that are not abortion?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because I'll give you an example that doesn't have to do with abortion. If I would take a scalpel and I would slice through your skin in your chest and slice through your ribs and slice into your heart, and my intention was to do heart surgery on you, that's medicine. If I would make the same incision through your ribs into your heart, and my purpose was to kill you, that's homicide. So it's very clear that purpose has something to do with this. It's not a procedure. It's, why are you doing this procedure? We have to separate the mom and the baby all the time. Most of the time, that's done in birth. The mom and the baby separate, and baby lives, and mom lives, and that's obstetrics, and that's medicine. That's what we're supposed to do. Sometimes, unfortunately, we have to separate the mom and the baby when the mom's life is at risk and the baby isn't big enough, isn't developed enough to live outside the mom's womb. That's still medicine, because it's an issue of, if we don't separate them, both of them will die. If we do separate them, hopefully at least the mom will live. And if we could make the baby live under those circumstances, we would. So again, the purpose of the separation is life. It's medicine. But in an abortion, what we commonly term as abortion, and in what is regulated in states that regulate abortion, what's regulated is a procedure that's done with the intent purpose of ending the life of a human being. So this is not medicine. In fact, that's what the Hippocratic Oath is all about. The reason that Hippocrates had an oath that his students would take is because way back in the day, 2,500 years ago, doctors would do anything you wanted. They would kill you, they'd cure you, whatever you could pay for. Hippocrates' students took a specific oath to say, I will not kill any of my patients. I won't do it in euthanasia. I won't do it in abortion. They took other oaths as well. I won't have sex with my patients. I won't divulge their secrets, et cetera, et cetera. I won't take advantage of them. But the specific Hippocratic oath that made Hippocratic physicians different than other doctors at the time is that the Hippocratic physicians would not intentionally kill a human being. That's not what medicine is about. And that was the foundation of medicine for 2,500 years until Roe versus Wade.
So let's talk about some of these procedures specifically now that we've drawn that line between abortion and things that are not abortion. When is it medically necessary to separate the mother from her child to prevent the mother's death? What kind of circumstances would require that without the intention of doing harm to either mother or child?
So one of the circumstances that happens in about 1 out of 50 pregnancies that necessitates separating the mom and her embryo or fetus is something called an ectopic pregnancy. And that's when the baby implants outside of the woman's womb. The woman's womb was designed to stretch and to give nourishment to the baby, you know, until the baby is big, until the baby is big enough to live out on its own, usually 9 months. But a woman's tube is not designed to do that. So what happens is, if the baby plants outside the woman's womb in her tube, then the tube will stretch to a certain point, and then it will rupture, and she can die. Now, with ectopic pregnancies, just to kind of put the basics on the table, with ectopic pregnancies, if you look, about 93% of the time, the baby is no longer living by the time the ectopic pregnancy is diagnosed. So you have pregnancy tissue there, but the baby couldn't survive, and it could be because the baby couldn't get enough nourishment in the tube. Number of different reasons. But it's only about 7% of the time that you have a baby with a heartbeat in the tube at the time of diagnosis. It's the babies with the heartbeat in the tube that are most likely to rupture and cause the mom to die. So if we don't operate, the baby will continue to grow, the tube will rupture, and she'll bleed to death. This used to be one of the most common causes of women dying in pregnancy, is ruptured ectopic pregnancies. So in that case, we have to separate them. And there is a principle that is used in Roman Catholic ethics called the principle of double effect, which means sometimes you have to do something and there's an unintended consequence of doing it. You don't do it to produce the unintended consequence, but there's no way to get around it. And that's the situation with ectopic pregnancies. We can't reimplant an ectopic pregnancy, not at this point in technology. Maybe in 50 to 100 years, we'll get to the point where we could, but that's just not an option right now. So we operate, we separate the mom and the embryo or fetus in her tube, and we do that with as much dignity as possible. If we can possibly separate the mom and the baby in a way that would allow, and if the baby's big enough, that would allow the mom or the dad to look at the baby, that would be ideal, because it would give the mom and the dad the acknowledgement that this baby is a baby, and we treat that baby's body with respect. But a lot of times in the ectopic pregnancy, again, the baby has already died and you can't even recognize that there's a fetal body there or an embryonic body there. So in those cases, there's nothing to really give the mom or dad. But we still treat that mom and dad as we would treat any other parents who lose a child. This is a loss of a child. Even though we had to separate, we still treat the baby and the mom and the dad with respect. And that's one case. Another case that happens sometimes is if the mom's bag of water breaks. Now, if the mom's bag of water breaks early, so early that delivery would mean certain death for the baby. So if that mom's water breaks, and if after careful observation she has no sign of infection, and you have to watch these women like a hawk because infection can happen very, very, very quickly. But in cases where a woman's water has broken early, there are a percent of women whose bag will seal off and they can continue on the pregnancy. So the fact that the bag of water has broken doesn't mean you automatically have to separate the mom and the baby. But I will tell you that she can go from not looking infected to being severely infected in 6 to 12 hours. If the choice is to watch this mom for a while and to see if her bag of water will seal over, it has to be done under conditions where she is taking her temperature all the time, where you're watching her blood count all the time. And there are some doctors that would say, look, the risk is too high and we are going to separate. At what point it becomes life-threatening is a little bit of a judgment call, but you can say once she starts to have an increase in the infection cells in her body, they're called white cells. Once she has an increase in white cells, or if she has an increase in temperature, or if her heartbeat goes up, then she's showing signs of infection, and then we would separate because we know how fast infection can move in a broken bag of water. And there are a few other rare circumstances with moms that are sick that have particular heart problems or liver problems that can also, we know, cause a life-threatening situation for the mom. And under those circumstances, then we would separate. As an OB who loves both mom and baby and who recognizes the humanity of both mom and baby, we take the separation of a mom and her baby before the baby can survive outside the womb very seriously. But there are certainly circumstances under which we have to do that. That is not an abortion. Okay, those are not abortions.
What is a molar pregnancy?
A molar pregnancy is where the egg is fertilized by two sperm or has an abnormal fertilization. And in those situations, most of the time, there is no baby present. So it's just like a cancerous growth of the placenta itself with no baby. Sometimes there is a baby present. And usually under those circumstances, the baby does not have a normal genetic composition that will allow the baby to survive. And so even if the baby's present, if this is a situation where the placenta is cancerous, which we call molar pregnancies a kind of a cancer, in those circumstances, we do have to separate the mom and the baby. And again, those are not abortions because the intent of the procedure is to save the mom's life. The intent of the procedure is not the direct destruction of the human being in the womb.
So let's talk a little bit about miscarriage. It is being commonly reported, and I think even misinformation is circulating among those who should know better, namely the medical community, that some laws that restrict abortion would also restrict treating a woman for miscarriage.
And that is amazing that a physician would not know the difference between a dead baby and a live baby. In a miscarriage, the baby has already died. And it is very clear that there is nothing that you can do except separate the mom and the baby who has already died. That is not the intentional destruction of a baby. The reason I make that clarification is that the team of pro-life doctors that I work with have reviewed every law in the country. There is not one law anywhere in any part of the country that prevents a doctor from treating a woman who is miscarrying. Not one, anywhere. So it is amazing to me that the people who are spreading this kind of information, and unfortunately, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, ACOG, is one of the worst. This is not an abortion. Miscarriage treatment, the baby is already dead. In an abortion, the baby is alive, and the purpose is to destroy that baby.
Dr. Donna Harrison is our guest. We're discussing abortion myths. She is director of research for the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists. We'll discuss the procedures DNC and DNE next. You can meet and hear journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway, LCMS President Matt Harrison, San Francisco Archbishop Salvatore Corleone, Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy, and Kyle Mann of the Babylon Bee at the 2023 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th at Concordia University, Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
They've met with the pastor week after week. He's taught them our precepts and Christ Jesus to seek. He shared the law of our God, which we strive to keep, the prayers, the creeds, and the sacraments deep. Now these young saints are right to partake in Christ's body and blood, all for his sake. A gift you are seeking to commemorate this? Ad Crucem has just what you won't want to miss. We've got icons, art, ornaments, jewelry, and more, greeting cards, crucifixes, posters, gifts galore. Your catechized friend will love what you give and treasure the gift all the days that they live.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Martin Luther tended to view the world through the three estates, the family, the church, and the state. The family provides the fundamental unit of society. In the church, God makes Christians, and in the state, he governs for the good of his people, his church. Well, the death and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ affects our life in all three of these estates, and that's the topic of the April issue of the Lutheran Witness. To learn more, visit cph.org/witness or visit witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Register today. The 2023 Lutherans for Life National Conference is October 11th through the 13th at the Holiday Inn Cincinnati Airport in Erlanger, Kentucky. The conference includes visits to the Ark Encounter and Creation Museum. Online registration is open now with early bird pricing at lutheransforlife.org/conference. Lutherans for Life, equipping Lutherans and their neighbors to be gospel-motivated voices for life. lutheransforlife.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're discussing abortion myths with Dr. Donna Harrison. Here is a little bit from the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for April. Disordered Lies About Human Nature and the Truth That Sets Us Free. Despising procreation is not a new problem. What is new, however, are the easy methods and cultural approval to put asunder what God has joined together, sex and babies. You can find out more about this great book from Pastor Christopher Eskett by going to our website, issuesetc.org, click any page, and you'll find it there on the right-hand side, or you can call Concordia Publishing House, and they will send you Disordered, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for April. Dr. Harrison, let's talk about some of these other procedures. What is a DNC, and what is a DNE, and how are these procedures, when employed for non-abortion purposes, unaffected by abortion restrictions?
Those procedures are procedures which are done to separate the mom and the fetus. So to say you have a DNC, that doesn't really tell you any indication as to why you had a DNC. Women can have DNCs when they're postmenopause in order to obtain tissue to look and make sure that there's no cancer or to remove a polyp. A DNC means dilation and curettage. Dilation just means you're opening the cervix, and curettage means you're taking a curved knife called a curette, and you're removing tissue. So You remove tissue in a postmenopausal lady to find out why she's bleeding or to remove a polyp. You can have a DNC to remove tissue when you've miscarried. Or you can have a DNC to remove the living baby and kill that baby in the process of being removed. So the procedure itself doesn't tell you anything about the indication. That's why the indication is so important. That's why the purpose is so important to know. A D&E is dilation and evacuation, or dilation and extraction. Depends on the region of the country what it means. But the dilation and extraction is used later in the pregnancy, that's after 14 weeks, in order to more widely dilate and then remove the baby. And it's generally, the baby is generally removed piece by piece. So in situations where the baby has miscarried, we try to avoid a D&E. And the reason is because it's important for the mom and dad to be able to have a baby to hold and to name and to grieve, even if that baby has died. So as best as possible, when you have a miscarriage later in pregnancy, 14 to all the way up till birth, when the baby has died, you try to deliver that baby, separate the mom and the baby in a way that respects the baby's body, so that the mom and the dad and the brothers and sisters and grandma and grandpa have someone to say goodbye to. And having miscarried myself 3 times, I can tell you that's important. Now, another procedure that's done is an induction procedure. And that's done in the cases of miscarriage as well. And that's done usually using a drug called misoprostol, which is a drug that has been used for inducing abortions, but it's also used for treating miscarriages, and that is to make the woman's body expel the baby who has already died. And in that way, when a woman miscarries and the baby's died inside her womb, you can be able to have her body deliver the baby and hopefully do the best you can to have an intact baby. Those are the most common ways of separating a mom and a baby. But again, it's not the procedure itself that is a problem. It's why is this procedure being done? So any of those procedures could be done on a live baby to guarantee that the baby doesn't survive. And there's one additional procedure that's almost never done on a dead baby, but is done on a live baby, and that's something called a D&X, or dilation and extraction. And a D&X is a procedure where the woman's womb is dilated, and it's generally done later in pregnancy, 18, 19, 20 weeks, and beyond when the baby could survive outside the womb. So the baby's womb is widely dilated, and then the abortionist reaches in and grabs the legs and delivers the legs and delivers the arms to the point where the head is stuck inside the cervix. And then the abortionist puts a scissors at the base of the brain and pops the scissors into the baby's brain and cuts, and then puts in a suction catheter to suck the baby's brains out. And that guarantees that this living baby will not pass outside of the birth canal alive. Guarantees that the baby will be dead. And it also provides specimens for the abortionist to sell for fetal tissue research. So it's a very gruesome procedure, and the product is horrific, as is always the product of a abortion. It is horrific to kill a human being in the womb, but this one's particularly horrific because many times that particular procedure is done on babies that are bigger and even on babies that could survive outside the womb. I think that's one thing that I want to emphasize again, and that is that when you look at an abortion that's done after the baby could survive outside the womb, say at 32 weeks, if that baby survives the abortion, it's called a failed abortion. Well, what failed? The separation of the mom and the baby did not fail. Baby is separated from the mom. But what failed to happen is the baby failed to die. And that just underlines the fact that the purpose of an abortion procedure is to produce a dead human being, one that was alive in the womb and is now dead.
It's being reported nowadays, especially after Dobbs, that pregnancy is more dangerous than an abortion procedure, that pregnancy is almost harrowingly dangerous. What is your response to that?
It's a scare tactic, and the reason for that scare tactic is to try to turn pregnancy into a disease. Pregnancy is not a disease. It's a beautiful, wonderful gift of bringing the next generation into the world. Do some women die in pregnancy? Yes, rarely, but they do. The United States has not a good record of safety in pregnancy for women, but we're still talking an event that is not common at all. And pregnancy is not a life-threatening situation for most women. There are a few women, and we talked about the need to separate, but for most women, pregnancy is a beautiful, wonderful, natural, physiologic process that brings the next generation into the world. Pregnancy is not a disease. It never has been.
If a woman goes to her physician, say, for instance, for a non-abortion DNC, for some other condition, and that physician says, well, you're lucky to have had this procedure done here in this state. Lawmakers are trying to ban this procedure. Say it's a DNC. How should they respond?
Well, they should say, doctor, can you read the law? What are you talking about? That's ridiculous. There is not a law in the country that bans DNCs, not one, anywhere, even proposed. So it's a failure of the physician to know what he's talking about or she's talking about. DNCs will not be banned. They are just a procedure. What will be regulated and hopefully banned is the use of a DNC for the primary purpose of killing a human being in the womb.
Is that true of the other procedures that we've discussed in the course of our conversation?
Yes, that's true. Although I will say a partial birth abortion would never be the only procedure that could be used to save a mom's life. So the partial birth abortion is primarily used to guarantee that an older fetus doesn't survive the delivery. But no, it's not procedures that are being banned. It's abortions that are being regulated. And abortions are procedures used for a particular purpose, and that is to make sure a baby is dead by the time the separation is finished.
Dr. Donna Harrison is a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist. She's director of research for the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists and associate scholar for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. You'll find a link to the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists under the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Harrison, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
Since 70% of Germans say that they've never read the Bible, why is Martin Luther's translation of the Bible a bestseller? We'll find out Friday on Issues Etc. from Uwe Simonetto. We'll also visit with Pastor Chris Eskett, author of our book of the month, Disordered Lies About Human Nature and the Truth That Sets Us Free. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
You can meet and hear Lieutenant Colonel Alan West at the Share in the Miracle Dinner Thursday evening, May 4th, at the Regency Conference Center in O'Fallon, Illinois. Lieutenant Colonel West is a combat veteran and former U.S. Congressman. Proceeds from Share in the Miracle Dinner benefit Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis. For more information, visit the Facebook page for Unity Lutheran School, East St. Louis. Share in the Miracle Dinner, Thursday evening, May 4th, at the Regency Conference Center in O'Fallon, Illinois.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.